He is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know, it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles, and while I have to laugh at the idea of the New England Patriots as these mistreated underdogs, yeah, the Deflategate Patriots, the Spygate Patriots, the five-time Super Bowl champion Patriots, that is the storyline that Tom Brady is going with. And it's part of a forthcoming NFL championship weekend about as compelling as any that I can remember. Sometimes a stale, overwrought word you grow to hate still represents the very best description available. So even though that word will be used ad nauseum this week, I will describe what we're about to see. New England at Kansas City in the AFC, LA Rams at New Orleans in the NFC as epic stuff. When the same teams played classic games earlier this season, we openly hoped for January rematches. Hot damn, we just got our wish. Epic.
All you need to know about sports today in 15 minutes, or maybe 18, you know, depending on the Warriors, the Steelers, Trump, and the LeBron James Media Network.
In fact, epic understates the theater we have between the Patriots and the Chiefs. You have Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time, and still the portrait of precision and command at 41, in a historic showdown against the new face of the NFL, Patrick Mahomes, the antithesis of Brady as a dazzling playmaker, the presumptive MVP, and the thrower of 50 touchdown passes, yet new to the championship round and still given to mistakes at age 23. And you have Andy Reid, maybe the most influential offensive coach of his era, against the NFL's most accomplished coach ever, Bill Belichick, the one defensive savant who can devise a game plan that might actually stifle Mahomes. This is pro football as we've known it for the better part of two decades, the Brady-Belichick collaboration with those five Lombardi trophies and eight Super Bowl appearances, establishing them as the league's most accomplished coach-quarterback tandem, marching into the Arrowhead Stadium madhouse to play the Chiefs and Mahomes, who is the future of the sport, the magical operator of the run-pass option, and the Steph Curry of football, able to make plays with both hands. You've seen him throw the ball with both hands, falling through the air when trapped in traffic, a true magician. But already, as Mahomes politely praises Brady with apt reverence, Brady is firing at the Patriots' recent critics, I guess myself included, saying this afterward on CBS.
It'll be a good game. They're a good team. And we played them earlier this year. You know, I know, you know, everyone thinks we suck and, you know, can't win any games. So we'll see. It'll be fun.
I was waiting for you to mention that. Yeah. Thanks a lot and good luck. We'll see you next week.
I want to say hi to my mom, my wife. I love you. And my dad, my sisters. And see you next week. Thank you. Have a good week.
And that certainly resonated on the internet. It was a keynote that echoed throughout their locker room after the dismantling of the LA Chargers, with Patriots players embracing this us against the world nonsense. Is it possible, though much of America is thoroughly sick of this team and always will view the Pats as cheaters, that the Patriots have yet another Super Bowl in them in their eighth straight AFC title game? Or will the Chiefs, always pretenders more than contenders, finally break through and reach their first Super Bowl since when? Hank Stram was dancing and prancing on the sideline? Google that, kids. Hank Stram. It's safe to say America is rooting for Andy Reid, the walrus look-alike innovator who lost a son several years ago to a heroin overdose and is known as Playoff Andy, not in a good way either, for his heartbreaking postseason crashes, even though only four coaches in history have been to the playoffs more than Reid, and he has spawned seven current NFL head coaches, including the coach who won the last Super Bowl, Doug Peterson. And who doesn't absolutely love Mahomes, who turns every game into a rock show, whereas Brady is still painting art gallery masterpieces? Here was Andy Reid, weary of hearing about his failures and Kansas City's failures.
Yeah, so listen, I don't get caught up in all that. I'm into history. I love history if it makes you better, right? So you learn from it and you move forward. And so that was the important thing for our guys. Don't get caught up on all the stuff that happened in the past. But if there's something you can learn from, if it was the play before or the game before, let's make even greater than you already are. You're one out of 32 in the whole National Football League. Just help make yourself better. So that's the approach we went with. And I don't think our guys worried too much about everything that went on. I told them they're out in the community. I'm not. I'm locked down in my office, so I don't hear all that stuff. I can turn you guys on and off and when I want to, but they're actually out there. They have a little bit more time to be out there. So, but just keep it positive and move forward.
Okay, an early prediction, though the Patriots got a huge game on the ground from rookie Sony Michel, which will help in controlling the ball and keeping Mahomes off the field. I do not see the New England defense surviving Mahomes and his array of weapons, including Kareem Hunt's able replacement at running back Damian Williams, in a shootout over 60 minutes in Kansas City. I don't see it happening. And it is strange timing for word to leak that injury-battered Rob Gronkowski is considering retirement. The AFC title game is not the time to win one for Gronk. Now that the Chiefs have ended that home playoff bugaboo stretching back to the last century, I don't see Mahomes and Reid being denied with a defense that showed up to pressure Andrew Luck on Saturday, and I think that defense puts the same hits on Brady. My early pick, Chiefs 36, Patriots 27. Sorry, Tom. In the NFC, the Rams were much more impressive than the Saints, who might have lost to the Eagles and Nick Foles if Alshon Jeffrey doesn't let the ball slip through his hands, through his wickets, oh my God, and into the midst of Marcus Lattimore for the game-saving pick. I felt more for Foles, who actually consoled Jeffrey on the sideline in what would be his final play for Philadelphia, than I felt good about the way New Orleans advanced to the title game. Can you imagine the Saints, after blowing the Minnesota Miracle last year, blowing this one also? That's contrary to the rhythm of the Rams, who were dominant as Sean McVay rolled out his double trouble running game, all-pro gasher Todd Gurley, complemented by heavy load Denver reject C.J. Anderson to steamroll the Cowboys, which means Rams-Saints in the NFC title game is more about the totality of two teams than it is about Drew Brees versus Jared Goff, another ageless treasure versus young gun matchup. The Saints were lucky to get out alive against the Eagles, who were stung by late injuries to Fletcher Cox and Jason Peters and various miscues, and they couldn't generate offense in the second half inside the raucous Superdome. But also credit the mad scientist of the French Quarter, Sean Payton, the coach who once opened the second half of a Super Bowl with a successful onside kick. He is still at it all these years later, facing a two-touchdown deficit in the second quarter at his own 30. Payton gambled with that fake punt. Could have been disastrous, but of course it worked, with long snapper Zach Wood hiking the ball to their Swiss Army knife utility man, Taysom Hill, who barreled forward for the first down on 4th-and-1. Amazing. Saints march downfield, and again on 4th-and-goal at the 2, Payton goes for it with Breeze using a bunch formation as a decoy and finding wideout Keith Kirkwood for the touchdown. Sean Payton, you've got to love him. The perfect gambling man for rambling New Orleans.
I trust Taysom a lot. He's a powerful runner. And so generally the looks that are somewhat favorable also come with some risk. And but we felt, especially where we were in the game, and look, I know it was early in the game, and yet there was still similar to New York, if you will, where we needed to shift the momentum. And we were able to, fortunately, and take advantage of it. But it was really based on the looks we saw during the week. Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes, it wasn't just, let's just try this in the first quarter. No, we spent a lot of time on it.
For all the talk about the Rams' glitz, this one was about a healthy and hungry offensive line in L.A., pieced together masterfully by McVay and general manager Les Snead, who deserves more attention, Les Snead. And they cleared the way for Anderson, of all people, to rush for 123 yards. Not bad for a guy dumped by three teams.
It's every week, every day. You know, I released from Denver, released from Carolina, released from Oakland. You know, sitting there waiting on the opportunity. So I just kept pushing myself. I never not believe myself. Big boys play great up front. I picked the right spots, and I'm glad the Rams trust my talent.
And the Rams' maligned defense did deliver, getting the typical unstoppable game from Aaron Donald, who ruled the trenches and slowed Zeke Elliott in the Dallas rushing game. Also, L.A. getting a big performance from Ndamukong Suh. And though the Rams head back to New Orleans, where the Saints outlasted them in a regular season shootout, I did see enough flaws in the Saints to inspire me to, yes, pick the Rams, although with a caveat. As long as the two pain-in-the-ass veteran cornerbacks, Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib, focus on winning the damned football game and stay out of trouble against the likes of the brilliant New Orleans receiver Michael Thomas. The Saints were lucky not to be down 21-0, which could have happened if Philadelphia's Brandon Graham recovers a fumble instead of giving it right back to the Saints. You knew what would happen. New Orleans taking advantage. They get another huge Lattimore pick, followed by Peyton's risky business, all of which may have pushed them past the valiant but undermanned and exhausted Eagles, but it won't against the Rams. They can't afford all of those mistakes and falling behind early against the McVay offensive. This time, McVay wisely using his running game and not relying as much on the passing game of Jared Goff, who is still given two mistakes. Very smooth game plan by McVay, who finally proved he is worthy of a coaching tree. Here were Goff and Gurley, not really in the mood to talk as much, as ready to go to New Orleans and nail down a Super Bowl berth in the Rams' third season in Los Angeles. 3 years, Super Bowl?
Feels good. We move on. We got another game, and are in the final four, and guaranteed ourselves a spot, and it's exciting. You know, you look forward to these moments all year, and being able to get a chance to play in a game like this and play well and come out on top is always what you dream about, and we got hopefully a couple more.
What's it feel like to win a playoff game?
Feels good.
Really good?
Real good. Great, actually.
Okay.
But this ain't.
As for the teams that lost, the Eagles are to be commended for squeezing the most of what could have been a lost season. And while they are committed to Carson Wentz as their quarterback, there is no disputing the mystique of Foles and how this team has played better with Foles than Wentz. Go ahead and build that statue of Foles even as he heads to another very lucky team in the offseason. And one more time, I have to ask, are the Eagles absolutely, positively sure they want to get rid of Foles and keep Wentz? Are they certain? The Cowboys have established a promising nucleus, including triplets on offense, though their run defense was gashed by the Rams. I'll ask this of Jerry Jones. Is he absolutely, positively certain he wants Jason Garrett back as head coach after the Cowboys were outcoached on both sides. For what it's worth, T.O. Terrell Owens among those calling for Garrett's hide again. And the Chargers were exposed defensively by the Patriots, providing no pushback on repeated Brady touchdown drives. In the world of Los Angeles football, the Rams have become the Lakers and the Chargers are the Clippers. And losing in the divisional round didn't help as the Rams were advancing to the conference title game. And the Indianapolis Colts were a mirage of sorts, putting up a nice turnaround season, but not belonging on the same field as the Chiefs. If Le'Veon Bell wants to come to Indy, owner Jim Irsay should spend the money to help Andrew Luck. And the Rooney Rule is in shambles, with only one of the eight NFL teams with head coaching openings hiring a black coach. This after five black coaches were fired this season. The lone minority hire is Patriots defensive play caller Brian Flores, coming off that big game Sunday. He is Honduran, making him the first Hispanic coach and full-time black coach in Miami Dolphins history. The McVay tree added another branch in Rams quarterback coach Zach Taylor, who will be hired in Cincinnati after the Bengals ziggied Hugh Jackson. Poor Hugh, that's two firings for Jackson in a matter of weeks. My God. And it's a good thing McVay finally won a playoff game, because his influence in the NFL hiring process this offseason for all those other teams has been, disproportionate to reality and a bit mind-boggling. Taylor in Cincinnati, Matt LaFleur in Green Bay, Cliff Kingsbury, the King, in Arizona, even Freddie Kitchens in Cleveland, all hired with the goal of emulating, if not thoroughly ripping off, how the 32-year-old McVay has honed that offensive machine and turned Goff into a Pro Bowl quarterback. In what may have been a direct shot at Kingsbury, who was fired at Texas Tech, for God's sakes, just a few weeks ago, Steve Sarkisian decided to reject the offensive coordinator position in Arizona to return to, yep, Alabama, in the same role for Nick Saban. I've never seen a guy turn down an NFL job to stay in college football. That is a first. Amazing how some of these guys get fired, Sarkisian twice by USC and the Falcons, and keep landing on their feet nonetheless. It's all about offensive know-how these days, and oh, how NFL teams love to play copycat when a trend is soaring. Check back with me in about 3 years on which McVay tree branches were solid and which were little twigs. I'm going to say Taylor works out and LaFleur and Kingsbury do not. As for the Rooney Rule, expect the activists to raise hell. But I will say this. There is intense pressure on owners and general managers to win. And if the coach doesn't get the job done, you have to fire the guy regardless of race. And the same goes for hiring. A team needs the best coach possible, not the best white coach possible or the best black coach possible. I heard somebody say Dabo Sweeney should be NFL coaching material. No, I cannot imagine Dabo's shtick working anywhere but in Clemson, South Carolina, good old boy country, where he called the Tigers the best college team ever at the championship parade over the weekend. I am not going there. Clemson is not the best team ever, but I loved me some Dabo anyway.
The 2018 team is the best ever. Drop the mic. The best ever. And they have set a standard. And they have set a standard for all future teams. But I want to say this. It's not that we won. It's how we won. So for you guys coming back, I'll change it up. Everything we've done once, we've done three or more times, except win the national championship. So we got work to do. We got work to do, and I can't wait to get started.
The Oakland A's are putting the hard press on Kyler Murray, fearing the Heisman Trophy winner is headed to the NFL and trying to persuade him to honor the contract he signed to play baseball. One more time, Kyler. Even if A's boss Billy Beane is getting clearance to increase your guaranteed money from $4.66 million, now hear this. You still will make considerably more money immediately in the NFL than you will in baseball. You will be a first-round pick and likely starter in the NFL, and you have no idea how you'll do in baseball. You'll be an instant big story in the NFL, whereas you go and ride buses and play for Beloit or Stockton in A-ball. And this is the ideal era for a dazzling dual-threat run-pass-option quarterback to excel in the NFL. See Mahomes, see Baker Mayfield, even at 5'9". So, Kyler Murray, there is no decision here. No decision. To the NBA, where the Celtics and the 76ers have a competition, all right. A competition to see which team can self-destruct first. What is going on in Boston? Brad Stevens, hailed as the next great coach in sports only a few months ago, has failed to establish roles on a team that almost reached the NBA Finals with a depleted cast and has had all sorts of trouble reincorporating the two highest paid players, Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. Irving caused an ugly scene in the huddle the other night when Stevens didn't call the final play for him. Then Irving called out Hayward for not getting him the ball after Jason Tatum missed the final shot and a bad loss at Orlando. All sorts of bad losses for the Celtics. Here was Irving sounding almost LeBron-like and rather childish in publicly belittling his teammates.
You got to appreciate being out there and just competing. You know, and it doesn't matter who you're going against. It matters the type of preparation you have, what you're going out and trying to accomplish. What's the big picture? What are we doing here? These are a lot of things that I don't think that some of my teammates have faced of just every single day. It's not easy to be great. So the things that you're doing, that you've done your whole entire career, of being able to, you know, kind of coast by in certain situations, and you've gotten away with your youth and stuff like that. Being on a championship ball club, you can't get away with that.
So I guess this is where we find out if Irving is a leader or a mope. And he's the one who brought on this pressure when he demanded the trade out of Cleveland to create his own championship scenario, remember? Even though he has announced he wants to sign a max deal in Boston, who knows if the Celtics want him for the long term if his crybaby act doesn't lead to an NBA Finals appearance. The Celtics were supposed to be the favorites out of the East. Not at the moment. Maybe he doesn't want to be there. Maybe they don't want him there. Maybe he wants to go to the Knicks. A lot at play in Boston. This came after a heated exchange between Jaylen Brown and Marcus Morris. Does this team have a coach? Stevens sure does seem smug amid all of this dysfunction.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, I think when you're part of a team for 82 games, it's not that big of a deal. And I've been through a lot of different teams, some of which have had taken time to become a team, some of which have been a team from day one, and they've all had moments like that at one time or another, whether the cameras were on or not. You know, I looked at it as, you know, everybody else was watching Marcus Morris and Jaylen. How about Smart breaking it up? Talk about growth. Holy smokes. I thought he would be in the middle of one of those. That's pretty good. You guys all looked at it as a negative. I could not believe what I was seeing. So, pretty good.
And the Sixers continue to have issues in trying to gel their big three, with Ben Simmons calling the effort soft and a bad loss to Atlanta, and Jimmy Butler naturally disagreeing, just as Butler called out Coach Brett Brown recently for minimizing his role in the offense. Butler also might not be long for Philly, and that would be three teams he has poisoned in the NBA. And Blake Griffin appears to have hard feelings about the trade that sent him from the Clippers to Detroit. Clippers owner Steve Ballmer patiently waited for Griffin at courtside as Griffin, making his first appearance at Staples Center since the trade, was finishing his pregame shooting routine. But Griffin, who clearly saw Ballmer extend his hand, Ballmer wanted to shake Blake's hand, blew him right off, sprinted right by him. While the NBA can be a cold business, it was unusual for the Clippers to trade Griffin only a couple of months after signing him to a max deal and promising to build their future around him. Then they banish him to Detroit? No wonder Blake is bitter. Here was Griffin's explanation after going for 44-8 in a rare Pistons victory. By the way, I'm not buying his explanation.
For 9 years now, as soon as I'm done doing my pregame shooting, I make sure there's a path and I take off running to the locker room. I don't stop running. So a lot of you know that. A lot of you have been here for a long time, and a lot of you have seen me do that before. So I don't change that for anybody. You know, to tweet out something like that, like what you did, I thought was kind of because you know that. But that's what it was, plain and simple. It wasn't anything planned. Every single game I've done this for, I don't know how long. So,
would you shake his hand if it wasn't prior to your warm up?
I'm honestly not here to answer hypothetical questions, to be honest.
And if Duke's freshman dominated one and done pre-lottery machine wins a national title this season, we'll be remembering the afternoon in Tallahassee when the kids survived a scare from Florida State, benefited from a late officiating call that could have gone either way, and then won the game on Cam Reddish's wide-open three at the end. Duke won without Zion Williamson, who left in the first half with an eye injury, and Mike Krzyzewski wasn't going to risk the eyesight of the man-child and presumptive number one NBA pick, who might just be the next LeBron. If Coach K does win national title number 6, will he retire? I don't think he will, because until the NBA does change the age limit, Duke will continue to corner the market on the one-and-doners in a sleazy sport, which, oddly enough, think about this, the FBI and the NCAA investigators never make their way to Durham. He is unscathed, and he's got another huge recruiting class coming in next year, so why would he quit? Here was Coach K on Reddish and R.J. Barrett, who, with Williamson, are expected to be the top three players taken in this year's NBA draft. Oh, my God, that would be unprecedented from the same team. Ugh.
Anything else for Coach?
Coach, do you think Cam and R.J. kind of knew they had something to prove today because Zion's had
something? Not to prove. Yeah, they don't have anything to prove. They have to make, you know, they have to win. You know, and they're both really good. They don't have to prove to anybody that they're good, but they have to beat that team that is playing great. And so I don't, but not to knock you about that, but proof is not the word. They rose to a different occasion, an occasion that we haven't been in yet this year.
Juxtapose Krzyzewski's good fate against the doomed Roy Williams, who just 11 miles down Route 501 in Chapel Hill saw his maddening North Carolina team get blown out by Louisville. Roy had a dizzy spell during the game and dropped to a knee. Is he going to retire?
I just got dizzy. I've done it a lot in my life. It wasn't pleasant, but that's happened before. I've lived to 68. If I'm going to die, I hope it's not during a game we play like that. I want to die when we play freaking well.
I guess I could see Coach K going out cutting down the nets, and I could see Roy going out early in the first round, which would serve Williams right for all those years of academic fraud in his program. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, we have monster rematches in the NFL championship games. I have the Chiefs and the Rams winning, which would set up another rematch. of the very best game of the regular season. Oh, could you imagine Chiefs-Rams in a dome in Atlanta? That would mark the true arrival of the NFL Renaissance. Chris, you picking the Rams in the Chiefs? I know you're picking the Rams.
Jay, my picks over divisional playoff weekend weren't that grand. What was I? I think I was 0 for 4, right? Something like that. For championship weekend, I'm going to go against you. I'm going to go Pats-Saints for Super Bowl 53 in Atlanta. I don't see the Chiefs. The Chiefs looked great, but the Patriots? Wow. I mean, there wasn't even a question of how they win it up. It's amazing. I think they just save it up. I think Brady and Belichick just save it up. And Belichick's defense, he's still a god of defense. And I think he will shut down the Chiefs, or at least slow down the Mahomes machine. Meanwhile, Rams, Saints, Superdome, loud. Rams didn't look, other than C.J. Anderson, the Rams, Jared Goff did not look great on Saturday night. If they didn't have C.J. Anderson running like a bowling ball through the defensive line of the Cowboys, Rams don't win that game. So I think the Saints will zone in on that from a defensive standpoint and make them have to throw it. And then it's just a crapshoot. And if the Saints secondary can zone in on the passing game of the Rams, bye-bye, Saints go to the Super Bowl. So those are my picks.
And Chris, who was the bigger baby over the weekend, Kyrie Irving or Blake Griffin? And do you find it fascinating, as I do, that the Celtics were better without Irving and Hayward than they are with them?
I think bigger baby award goes to Blake Griffin. That's just nonsense. And he acted like a punk. And not surprising with the Celtics. I'm not that impressed with Kyrie Irving, never have been. And Gordon Hayward, unfortunately, when a player has a season-ending injury like he did, especially to begin the season, things are just never the same. And I think that's what the Celtics are realizing, and the other players are stepping up, Jay.
Thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. As Jeff Bezos prepares to divvy up $137 billion in assets, with his soon-to-be ex-wife. In a Marriott aside here, Bezos and other woman Lauren Sanchez were doing some serious PDA at my favorite Italian restaurant on the west side as Michael Strahan sat nearby. This really isn't funny. What? This restaurant, there's no dark corners. It's small tables, a small room in there, like 17-year-olds, you know, sucking face in an Italian restaurant. A Mariotti aside. As all of that was happening, it's very nice to report Tim Tebow is getting married. Heck, Tim, I didn't say hell, I said heck when it comes to Tim. He even celebrated with his fiance the 2017 Miss Universe at Disney World. So, Tebow. So maybe it's time for these loser trolls online to stop worrying about Tebow's virginity. And college football's revised transfer rules make it easier for players to change addresses, with all eyes on quarterbacks in the so-called NCAA transfer portal, whatever that is. Georgia's Justin Fields is off to Ohio State, while Jalen Hurts, forever an Alabama legend for accepting an unfair fate behind Tua Tagovailoa and still winning that SEC title game when summoned, could be the next quarterback at, I don't know, Oklahoma or Miami or Auburn or Maryland, where ex-Bama offensive coordinator Mike Locksley has taken over in College Park. I say, why not Oklahoma? Imagine three straight Heisman winners for Lincoln Riley. Imagine Hurts beating out Tua for the Heisman and then knocking out Nick Saban in the playoff next season. That would be revenge. My smartest athlete of the week is hockey star Rick Nash, one of the NHL's best goal scorers of his era, who retired at just 34 years old because of concussion-related symptoms. The league commissioner, Gary Bettman, refuses to acknowledge that brain trauma is a life and death hazard in his sport. Maybe Nash's departure will remind Bettman of his blind spot. And if you thought Serena Williams would just fade away after her meltdown at the U.S. Open, you don't know Serena. Though 37 years old now, she is leaner and quicker, and anybody who doesn't pick her to win the Australian Open should be eaten by one of those huge, scary, multicolored spiders that almost devoured me once in Sydney.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too white male for Jemele Hill. Take it away, Jay.
Personally, I've seen more than enough LeBron James in the playoffs the last 13 years. Yeah, I can live without him in 2019. But the same cannot be said for the NBA and its broadcast partners, which face a ratings nightmare if James' groin injury lingers just long enough for the Lakers to tumble out of the playoffs in the very deep Western Conference. Even with LeBron, the Lakers were having trouble winning on the road. Without him, they look lost, and the kids are still kids, not worthy of the postseason in that conference. Now, I love the new icons of the NBA, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis, Nikola Jokic, and who doesn't love existing superstars such as James Harden and Russell Westbrook? But the fact is, they're playing in places such as Milwaukee, Toronto, New Orleans, Oklahoma City, Portland, Denver. These are off-market towns. And if LeBron and the Lakers do miss out on the playoffs with bad teams and big markets such as New York and Chicago and those teams in Boston and Philly quarreling within, you could have just the Warriors and a whole lot of newness for a league that depends on casual mainstream fans to boost TV ratings for 2 months. And if there is one player the casual fans know, it is LeBron. If the Lakers miss the playoffs and Eastern teams with inferior records qualify, the NBA has only itself to blame, refusing to adopt a 1-16 seeding proposal that would put the top 16 teams into the playoffs regardless of conference. Not that LeBron cares all that much. Mr. Hollywood continues to make his way around town with that sore groin standing on the sideline for the Rams game. Hey, babe, let's do lunch. Let's make another doc. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever, ever, ever let anybody meet you in life.